From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey, fuckers, how you doing?
Hello, I'm Corinne Fisher.
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
And this is another episode of Guys, We Fucked, the Anti-Slut-Shaming Podcast. This is actually an episode that some of you may have heard before. This was a bonus episode that we released in the spring of 2017 on when we were on like the Stitcher Howl app. Yeah. We wanted to, why release this episode? Because unfortunately, the young woman that we interview on this episode took her own life at the beginning of August of this year. It is Daisy Coleman, who was one of the stars of the Netflix documentary Audrey and Daisy. Sadly, if you remember, the co-star Audrey had already taken her own life. So when we talk about the Me Too movement and we talk about, you know, believing women, I think it's very important to remember situations like this and how heavy being sexually assaulted can weigh on a survivor. And that doesn't mean it always does. If you are a survivor yourself and you're having an okay time with that experience, that's great. That's amazing. Audrey definitely took her own life because of this. And according to Daisy's mom, the reason that she feels like her daughter took her own life is because she found out that she was unable to have children because of the trauma that her body underwent from being raped. So super heavy, obviously. And Daisy did so much great work. She passed away at the age of 23. And in that time, you know, obviously did so many interviews, was a part of that film that I know touched a lot of you guys. She went on to create the sexual assault prevention organization Safe Bay, which the Bay is before anyone else, so safe before anyone else, in 2017, which we've, you know, done some things to raise money for. And obviously, if you can take a look at that website, that's, you know, everyone else who works with that organization is still keeping it going. But when Daisy passed away, The Cut did a beautiful piece on her, and so many people reached out because they had remembered Daisy from our show, and she was also apparently working on a film at the time, and the cast and crew, I know, kind of expressed that they would feel a lot of healing in hearing this interview. And so we got special permission to release this and, you know, just to kind of mourn her and remember who she was and what she was about, and keep in mind all the things that are important about the serious part of this podcast, because it is a comedy podcast and we do wild stuff, but also there's a serious part, and sometimes it's hard to match those together, but we keep trying.
We can't ignore the pain that comes along with something like sexual assault, and just this is a great you know, it's unfortunately an example of what it can do to the human heart and the human mind and how they are treated.
Yeah, and additionally, like, just how words on the internet do affect people, even though you can't see them, because I know another topic covered in this documentary and that, you know, Daisy talked about herself was just how people really did not come behind her. They did not gather around in a community, like a way of community or a
they
way
gathered
of support.
Around the
they
boys who
bullied
raped her.
They said she called her a liar, those kinds of things, you know, absolutely not necessary. And if you truly think something is not true that someone's saying, like, there's other ways to
absolutely
go about
and
that.
If your body was violated in such a way as sexual assault, no matter how much you understand that an internet troll is a sad sack of shit, the bullying words that you have to unfortunately ingest on a daily basis, if you check your own social media, do have an effect.
Especially if, you know, when you're so young, if you're kind of grappling with those feelings yourself, if you're thinking like, am I, is there something wrong with me? Is there less, is there a reason why I was raped? There isn't, but you can still feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so if you're feeling that way, you're vulnerable, you have this kind of space open to allow yourself to be felt that way, you know, from other people too, like that's just going to double down onto your own dismissive or hurtful feelings to yourself and your own emotions. So, Daisy has obviously had an impact on so many people, that both people that she's met and people that she hasn't met. And we're very happy that we have this piece of her on recorded to share with the rest of you and let her legacy and her work live on in everything that you do.
Welcome to Guys We Fuck,
the anti-slut-shaming podcast.
Yo, you having sex?
I'm Christina Hutchins.
I'm Corinne Fisher.
And I'm boyfriend. Bring us your slutty, your horny, and your shame.
Hey, you a slut?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's talk about fucking.
We're here with Daisy Coleman. How you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
Let me just sit inside.
Go. No, I'm just kidding. We're very excited to have you. We were just talking about how we had recommended the documentary Audrey and Daisy to people. I remember seeing the preview and I was like, fuck, I cannot. I really want to see this. Like, it's going to. And I was excited because I'm like, I feel like a lot of people are going to see this who didn't realize how serious of an issue rape is and how common it is and how just everything that goes along with it. So I'm like, man, this is really going to open people's eyes. And I think it did. Did you, when that documentary came out and you watched it, was it an accurate, were you like, yeah, that's, I thought it did a good job.
Yeah, I feel like it definitely was really eye-opening for a lot of people, not only just because rape is very prevalent in our society, but because it happens to a lot of younger people. And usually we're tending to think that it only happens to girls in college, at parties and stuff, but it's 3.5 times more likely for someone from the age of 16 to 19 to be sexually assaulted or a victim of sexual violence.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something that, like, we talk about this all the time, but, like, I did not know how common it was until mm-hmm. we get floods of emails all the time, at least a couple times a day from somebody who has been sexually assaulted. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is, like, it's why insane. Aren't we talking about this? And it's insane that there's no requirements to talk about it in public education is bullshit. And there's just so many things that are bullshit about it. But, like, with your specific instance, like, that was such an it's all infuriating, but, like, God damn it, I wanted to punch a wall after watching a documentary. Did you feel rage after what had happened? Because you were younger, right? You were a teenager?
Yeah, 15? I was 14.
14, okay. And then just the way that people treated you and were shaming you about it, like, that would make me feel like I'm crazy. And I don't know how, I mean, my anger always gets the best of me with situations, but I don't, how do you deal with that? How do you come to terms with it, or do you, or what's your method?
Well, I mean, immediately after the assault and everything, of course, I was very angry because I was so young, but after time passed and everything, I learned to forgive them, not because they apologized, because I knew there wasn't going to be an apology present, but I forgave them on behalf of myself because I knew that was what was going to let it go for me and what would relieve that stress for me.
And now, was that your first sexual experience?
Yeah, I lost my virginity to it, so.
Okay, and has that shaped, if in any way, sex for you or your outlook on sex?
Not necessarily. For 2 years, I didn't really date and I kind of strayed away from guys for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of stayed away from the dating scene. Didn't really like guys for a while. I came out, I was bisexual my sophomore year, and I was mm-hmm. more tendency towards girls mm-hmm. because of that, so.
Yeah, so like at 14 is super young, but had you had bisexual like feelings before that? Or do you think?
Oh yeah, of course. I've always been like super weird and gay, but.
It's not weird.
But it was just more obvious after the assault because I was less attracted towards men. Because mm-hmm. of it, yeah. So.
It's just interesting, like in the nature versus nurture conversation, to have, you know, something that happens in your life, like kind of sway you in the direction more towards women. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. A lot of people talk about, I have so many different types of conversations about this with people who have been raped and then they're just hypersexual and they kind of always were. And then people kind of pin them as like, well, you're hypersexual because you were raped. And it's like, well, no, I mean, in some cases, yes. But in like one of my close friends, like she was always that way. So just because she likes sex and it was this weird dynamic of like, she had to ask herself like, shit, am I fucking all these people? Cause I want control over something. Or is it just because I've always been the sexual? And she kind of figured out that I've just always been the sexual. And it's like, but to have it happen as your first sexual experience, like, God damn, I just want to punch. I don't know. That's crazy.
Now I want to talk about, obviously, like you can expand from what we saw in the documentary because that's only a small piece of it. But what were the reaction from what was the reaction from the community for those who have seen, for those who haven't seen after the assault?
So do you mean the like community of Maryville?
Yeah.
Or? Yeah. Like
because it was negative. You. So yeah. I kind of want to. Yeah. There's a lot of slut shaming that goes into being a rape survivor, unfortunately.
Yeah, so a lot of people from Maryville didn't really have much of a response towards the film. A lot of them
really?
Had no comments.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Just no comments. But how was it for you as an individual person living there? Like, obviously, we know from the film, but for people.
I don't live in Maryville anymore.
Yeah, but when you did, yeah.
How many years? Did you live there for a couple years after that?
No, we were pushed out of town, basically. So,
but because of the reaction, right?
Yeah.
And what was being said to you guys? What was being, or to you, like, what was being, everyone was talking about it in school and they were labeling you as the bad guy?
Yeah, basically, kids would jump out in the hallway and call me names like slut and stuff. Most of it was online, though, because it's a lot easier for people to hide behind a screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone's a fucking, it's like we're all drivers in our car and we'll honk at you all day. But then when we're face to face, we'll be like, oh, hello, excuse me.
It's yeah, like, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Ugh. So when you moved to a new town, how was that? Like, was it a fresh start? Did it feel truly like a fresh start or?
Well, I didn't necessarily move to a new town. I moved to my hometown. So that was originally where I was from. And right. Then I moved to Maryville. And then after all that happened, I moved back.
Yeah. So what do you know a lot of other people who were sexually assaulted?
Now after the film has been released, yes. And after my case blew up on social media and throughout the media, a lot of survivors came forward to me and told me about their stories. And I made a lot of connections with a lot of people because of it.
That's great. And do you give like people, like what advice would you give to people who are dealing with it, especially if they are, they're dealing with something that happened to them that young and you're still trying to cope with people, humanity, reality, society, all these other things you're trying to like understand and take in. But then that happens and it just like rocks your world.
Yeah, it definitely throws off your sense of self-identity and everything. So I would definitely want any survivor to know that they're not alone in what they're going through and that there's millions of other people who have gone through what they've gone through and that they're willing to support them and stand behind them and that if someone's being a freaking dick, then not to listen to them because there's millions of people like that in the world. But what they say isn't going to matter in the end because what matters is what those people that love you say.
Yeah, and how you feel about yourself because it's like you can let those things, it's so easy to let negative comments seep into your self-conscious, especially when it's after something traumatic happened and they're mocking you for it. And you're the person who got, you were the victim in the situation. And it's like, oh my God. But it's like you have to build that strong stability for yourself to be able to carry you through.
Yeah, and your commentary on people you love being a real kind of like foundation for you is interesting because your older brother is sitting right here. We can see him. And yeah, his reaction in the film, Audrey and Daisy, was really, you know, it's that kind of anger that anyone who has a sibling, especially an older brother, would know. And now you guys are working together with an organization called Safe Bay. So can you kind of tell us a little bit how that came about, how you guys decided to do it together?
Well, originally Safe Bay was co-founded by three other survivors that I was working with and that I met just kind of through the weeds of everything. And basically we were founded in, what was it, November of 2004? 2015. So it's been quite a while that we've been up and running. But basically from there, we developed ourselves as a 501c3. So we're a non-for-profit. And now we travel to schools and we basically talk to high school students and college students about their Title IX rights, what consent is, bystander intervention. And our main goal is to educate, because what we've noticed is education is obviously lacking in schools, and that's what we need to bring.
What have you ever heard through traveling to these schools and talking to students? Have you ever heard somebody come up to you and they're just being honest, but it's like, dude or girl, you have it so wrong. Like your concept of sexual assault. Like, have you ever kind of seen that surface with somebody asking a question that they're genuinely unsure about? And then it's just like, well, is it rape if she's asleep or something like that?
I mean, I haven't necessarily heard it to that extent, but people do have misconceptions about assault and rape all the time. Like, people think that if you're being raped, it has to be someone jumping out of an alleyway and just like attacking you. And most of the time, it's someone that you know and trust. There's just many things that people don't really realize.
Yeah. And the one thing, as Corinne and I kind of educated ourselves more on the issue of like rape kit backlogs in cities and stuff, and it's like, good God, there's just so much the legislation surrounding it. And then it's like, with sexual assault, it's so crazy because the proof or the statute of limitations is what, 7 years?
Yeah, it's pretty assault. Low.
But then, so to prove it, you've had to have gotten the kit right away within 48 hours, I believe is the time period. And then, but if there's no proof, which there's so many reasons why there wouldn't be, or there's no witness, it's like, what's the case? And it sucks. Like, it's like, is there a way that we could solve sexual assault cases specifically that isn't innocent until proven guilty? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I mean, honestly, I wish I had an answer for that. Yeah. But obviously the judicial system has been quite a failure for the past few years for all survivors. So that's why we're trying to attack the education portion of this and actually change the context of our society.
And when you go to these schools, what are the types? Obviously you don't have to like do this presentation for us, but what kind of things are you, or exercises or talks are you giving them, like a little summary of that?
We actually like to show some of the videos that we made, which are an educational series, which you can go to safebay.org and get from our event manager, Shale, and she'll email them to you. There's some about if a survivor comes to you and confides to you about what happens, what you should respond with and what you shouldn't respond with. There's things about bystander intervention, what your Title IX rights are, and et cetera, et cetera.
What's the wrong way to respond to a friend who's confiding in you?
Asking them what they were doing, what they were wearing, why they were drinking, stuff like that.
And also, what are your thoughts on people choosing not to report their sexual assault?
If they choose not to report their sexual assault, I completely stand by them, because I've seen personally what the court system does when someone does report, and I absolutely do not blame them for not reporting.
Yeah, I wish more people understood that and would not get so publicly angry about, well, she didn't say anything for like 8 years. What the fuck? Well, why do you really want to, they're going to live through the entire event. You might have to see the person and look the person in the fucking eye. And then you're going to go through all of this for maybe nothing. Maybe nothing happens. There's not enough proof or whatever the fuck could happen in a case to have it, the rapist be deemed not guilty. And it's like, that's a big gamble. That's a big emotional gamble that you're taking, it seems like.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I definitely agree.
And then after, you know, you took this 2-year break from kind of dating, what was the first relationship you had after your sexual assault? What was that like? How did it come about? How did you feel? How did you know that you were ready to get into a relationship?
My first relationship after my sexual assault, he was kind of an idiot. So.
How so? Like, 1 + 1 = 7, right? Or like,
No. He cheated on me a bunch and was a total dick. And so, I mean, after I realized my self-worth, I definitely was like, dude, you got to go to the curb. Like, you're not worth it.
Yeah.
You're not even cute.
Was there a moment where, doesn't that suck? It's like, dude, I'm so much hotter than... What the fuck?
I'm out of your league.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, that's always a
Was there a process, though, that helped you to even get to a point where you were open to being in a relationship? Like, what was your life like in those 2 years? Because I think so often, especially like teenage girls, like so much of their life is about, you know, guys or girls or whoever they're sexually attracted to. But like, how did you become more you in those 2 years without any relationships?
I feel like a lot of that was kind of finding my own self-identity once again, because after my assault, all of that was kind of crushed and just taken away from me. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that was that process. And a lot of that was done through wrestling and getting myself into different activities and just kind of
physically wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
I was like, because at the end of the documentary, it kind of talks about your wrestling, right? Because I knew about this somehow already. Yeah. Because we both watched it like a long time ago when it first came out. So what kinds of, how did you get involved in wrestling? It's not something you hear a lot.
I started when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So it was always just kind of a natural outlet for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you have do you have anger or, I mean, before?
I was going to say, I could benefit from like wrestling.
Eight. Oh yeah, definitely. I had very bad anger issues after my assault. So, it was great to just go beat the shit out of someone on the mat instead of taking it out on different people.
Right. Cause you seem very calm right now.
Yeah. So calm. No, I'm so much more chill.
Do you still wrestle?
Yeah. Our season's over right now. So.
Dude, that's so cool. What are like your favorite parts of wrestling? Just like the actual, just like getting aggression out. Cause I don't know. I'd kind of be worried that like, whoever I'm wrestling, I would just envision like you're my fourth grade teacher who said I wouldn't be anything. And I would just do a move that was illegal and then be disqualified.
I don't know. I think my favorite part is just getting out there and working hard.
Yeah, that's fun.
Simple to the point. Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
And do you have, is it an all female wrestling league or is it?
The college team that I'm on currently is an all female league, mm-hmm. but I wrestled with boys all through high school and middle school.
Really? Oh, they do have co-ed wrestling in high school and middle school.
Well, if they don't provide a female version of the sport in high school, they have to let you on the team.
Do they have to be, if you're in high school and it's a co-ed wrestling team, how many other girls were on the wrestling team? It was just you? Or?
1 year I was able to get two other girls to go out with me. But
like, come on, dude, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Friendship building.
Yeah, because every now and then we do get emails from, you know, women who are the only woman in an otherwise all male league. And certainly there's been some problems.
Yeah.
Did you ever experience any issues with being the only woman or one of few women or...
Oh my God, every time you go out there and wrestle a guy, they're either like, I'm going to beat the crap out of this girl or
Jesus.
I'm going to take it easy on her because I'm going to feel bad if I beat the crap out of her.
Which one makes you feel worse?
Both are pretty equal.
Yeah, both are pretty shitty.
Yeah.
I think I would be more offended by the like, oh, the one where it's like, oh, I have to go easy on her. She's
oh yeah.
Yeah, that one definitely pissed me
off. That would piss me off so much to the point where I'm like, oh, you're going down, motherfucker.
And now, oh my God. Like, what was it like when you... Dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. Describe that.
It was hard once I got to high school. I used to slam on guys because I was bigger when I was like little. But once I got to high school, it kind of caught up with me. So
when you slam on guy, like Diamond Dallas Page, fucking, you know, I don't know. He was my favorite. WCW, totally different. But but like, what's the move?
I mean, it really depends on the style of wrestling that you're in because there's folk style, freestyle, Roman, Greco. There's a million different styles and different roles and different moves. So
shit, I didn't even fucking.
You can't have like very fancy nails right now, but you can't have. I mean, imagine you can't have that.
Yeah, it was my birthday for like 4 days ago.
Happy birthday! Because I was like, oh, that would.
Oh, I would use those as claws.
That would be a great attack until one of them ripped off your fingers, and then you were like on the floor in pain.
Oh, I would say like. Oh, someone's getting their sight taken away from them today. Use them as weapons. Probably. Yeah, that's why I can't wrestle, probably.
that's a really good idea. So did you lose any friends after your sexual assault?
Definitely. Because so many people were scared to stand up for me that they just kind of like swayed away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other half of the people were just like, well, why were you out and doing the whole victim blaming thing? So
did they ever, I mean, you might have just never talked to them again after that, which I get, but did they ever come around to being like, yeah, that I understand why I shouldn't have said that to you. I was mean. That was mean. Like, did they ever have these moments of like, oh, I'm being the dick.
Of clarity.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some people come forward to me and apologize for not standing up for me in high school, but I haven't really had anyone apologize for being a dick to me in high school. So, no. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I still hold grudges.
Once a dick, always a dick. So.
So true. So fucking true.
Is the...
What?
No, she's just laughing.
Oh, dicks. What else? Okay, so we've had people on who... have been victims of rape specifically. And we talk about the rape just for an hour. What else do you want to talk about sexuality that has nothing to do with rape? Like, is there any other things that interest, like, or like, are you kinky? Are you, because I feel like rape shouldn't define you.
Sorry to put your older brother.
Oh yeah, that's probably weird. We don't have to talk about that in front of him.
Or you can go to the kitchen.
Yeah, or you can just, you know,
wave or don't talk, just don't make direct don't eye Steven. Contact during it.
But like, you know, a person who has been sexually assaulted is so much more than that. And it's like, I don't want to have, I'm like, we don't, I don't want to have another person come on here who was raped and we just talk about that because I feel like you have other things that
it
you probably want to talk
you.
About.
It's not the only yeah, thing about sure. you.
Yeah. I mean, I get tired when people say the guys we fucked girls. So I can't even imagine how you feel about people just, right. you know.
Well, I mean, I'm super open-minded now. Like, I'm super supportive of strippers and shit. Like, if you want to go show
hell
your body,
yeah.
then hell yeah, go do that.
Oh, I love
and did you have a negative opinion of strippers beforehand? Or
oh no, I've always been pretty.
Yeah, strippers rule.
I was like, oh, if you have
you can make 4K a week, then do it. Right?
Yeah. Oh, so I've been to some. Which where were we at Nashville?
Mm.
The stripper. They were like, did these Spider-Man moves? And it was the most impressive
sure,
thing I've
yeah,
ever seen. And
they're
they fucking
acrobats.
Slam their heels on the floor. Woo! I was like, God damn, she deserves an award because
yeah,
that's really impressive.
They deserve 4K a week. Definitely. Yeah, if yeah. you can do shit like that on a pool, then yeah.
And I also love, like, as I've been to strip clubs, I'm like, this isn't a fun experience because it's just like the strippers being like, I didn't tell my son I was getting back into stripping. I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm like, oh, I don't know what to tell you. Oh, God. But then, like other ones, I love seeing strippers who are badass on stage, but also they just like, you see them taking a guy for a ride, and the guy's like, you love me? Okay. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, just milking the money off them. Like a guy says they like penguins, and they're like, oh yeah, I love penguins.
You
like,
do? Fate. I don't know.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting stuff off your chest is incredible. It's so therapeutic. We all carry around different stressors. Some of them are big, some of them are small, a lot of them are very big. But we keep them bottled up and it could start affecting us negatively. And then we act like a jerk to the people we love. And we're like, this is not how I want to be. Therapy has saved my life personally. There are so many benefits of it. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. And it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. Although if you have experienced major trauma, highly recommend. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designated to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist and you could switch at any time. Finding a therapist is like dating. They're not all going to work out in the first try. BetterHelp understands that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/guys to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/guys. Guys, the weather's getting warmer. It's time to say goodbye to your jackets and all your sweaters, and you got to refresh your wardrobe. Well, luckily, I found Quince, and now you have too, because you're listening to this. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you go to their website, the amount of categories, they have travel, lookbooks, men, women, home, babies, and kids. Their stuff is so cute. So I own a couple items from Quince, and one of them is the Italian leather hand-woven crossbody purse in green, emerald, and I get compliments on it all the time. It's a small purse, which I really love because then I don't put as many things in it. Guys, Quince is amazing. They have very luxury items for very cheap prices. Get warm weather ready, baby, with Quince. Go to quince.com/GWF. for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/GWF to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GWF.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
What other stuff do you, have you ever been to a... I'm going to ask this in front of your brother, but if you don't want to answer, you don't have to. But if you want to go downstairs, you're more than welcome to Steven's down there. Have you ever been to a sex club?
A sex club?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
I would guess by the inquisitive nature in which
I
you
live in Missouri, so.
Oh, I guess.
I'm sure there is one in Missouri.
They might have the best ones.
Yeah.
The one that I went to that I loved, and I've only went to one that I've loved. I've went to a couple. Is in Toronto. It was called Oasis. And shout out, because that was, everyone was just, they were cool. They were open-minded. They were doing their own thing. No one was creep. There were no creepers. It was just fun. And there was a pool. And then you could have sex. You can be naked. You cannot. You could just walk around.
Wait, what? They have those in the US?
Hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
I've been to two in New York alone. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Your manager's like, thumbs up.
Girl, do they?
Yeah, no, 100%. Sorry. I mean, basically,
he's hating. Your brother is hating everything.
They're like, you know, they're safe spaces where you have to go through some kind of a vetting process usually to get in. You have to pay like, not a crazy amount of money, but enough that like, you're not just going to go there to watch. You're going to be there because you want to be there. Like if you throw down $100, like that's not a $5 cover. You want to be there.
Yeah. And it's just an environment that's very welcoming and very focused on safety. There's condoms everywhere. There's security people. And if anyone does something weird, you just tell, like it's safe. It's very safe. The ones that I've experienced. The one in Atlantic City. Just don't go to one in Atlantic City.
Well, Atlantic City as a whole
is a
cesspool.
Yeah.
Shout out to Atlantic City.
Shout out, you guys. You tried. You can move though.
A lot Donald Trump's fault too.
I know.
He was like, let's make this better. But then I just made the rest of the town even more poor than they already were. I mean, that was basically
the Trump
effect. His plan.
What do you think colleges could be doing better? I'm going to go back to the assault thing, just because that's one question I forgot to ask.
I feel like colleges, after the hunting grounds was dropped, they've kind of stepped up to the plate, but at the same time, they aren't being as proactive as they can with like the whole sexual assault thing, because whenever a survivor reports, they don't even ask if they want to report it to the police. They're just like, okay, this guy's kicked off campus for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what that's total do? Bullshit.
It does nothing. It says, oh, you get a little hiatus from school. Okay.
Yeah, right on.
Because I don't know, but that a perpetrator would not, if it is made known that if you are accused of sexual assault, it is taken seriously and you know, the proper actions are taken, disciplinary actions, then I don't know. Would that decrease the likelihood of it happening? Or I don't know. Is something so fucked up in your brain that you're going to do it anyway? But it seems like colleges are so lax up until recently that it's like, well, yeah, no shit. They get away with it. Mm. You're like, yep. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Can you describe what in your memory, what was your first like, healthy romantic relationship that you were in your lifetime? What did that look like? Because the first guy, so, you know, sexual assault, 14, 2-year hiatus. Then you date this guy. He's a dick. He's cheating on you. You
not
must have
cute.
a healthy
I've
story.
Only had 3 boyfriends.
Okay. So. Were any of them good?
The one I'm with right now is he's pretty kosher. Chill.
Kosher. Nice.
And like, how was there a light bulb that suddenly went on in your head that said, this is how I want to be treated. This feels good. How did you know this was?
Yeah, a light bulb definitely came on about 4 or 5 days ago when I was drunk as shit at my birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And
as
my best friend was getting naked on my stripper pool. And then he pulled me to the bedroom and let me go to bed instead of letting me partake. So
he's like, yeah, you need a blanket,
yeah,
some water.
Yeah, you need a nap. Yeah,
right.
You're getting too wild.
And how long have you guys been together?
We dated before for about like 3 months, but we've been together for about like 4 or 5 now.
4 months.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, for me, I've had a boyfriend before. I've been with the same person for 6 years, but a lot of my relationships, except for one, was just kind of shitty. And I was like, well, I guess I'll take it. You know, you kind of settle. And then when you meet somebody who's just a kind person who you respect, who's a gentleman who respects you, who cares about you, who elevates you, and you elevate them, you're like, oh, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, I didn't know until I had it, which took a sec.
And how old are you now?
I just turned 20 the other day, so.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm a baby.
20. Do people ever talk to, like, you're like, oh, you're a baby, you're only 20. Do you hate that?
Oh my God, all the time.
Yeah. I feel like people are very condescending to younger people. It's like, you know, I don't need that shit.
Especially in the tattoo industry, because everyone's like 25 when they start, and I started at 18. So like,
as an artist?
Like, yeah, for sure. And everyone just kind of like looks down on you. They're like, you're the underdog. You're too young for this shit. and you just kind of step all over them when you're better than them.
You'll see.
So are you doing really well in the tattoo industry right now?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm currently moving shops because I wanted to be in a bigger city. So,
and where's your new shop going to be?
Excelsior Springs, Missouri.
Where? Oh, I was like,
yeah, middle of nowhere.
Okay. Has anybody ever asked for like a tattoo that you're like, bro, listen,
like a penis tattoo?
Or like, I want the word love tattoo on my eyelid. That's a good idea.
Someone came to me the other week and they wanted a golf ball tattooed on their ass. And I was like, that's just a circle with some dots on it. Are you sure?
But like shading. But I want to like shade. I want like a shadow on the golf ball. He just loves golf.
I always wondered like how much say does the tattoo artist have when like the person is clearly making a poor decision? How much say do you have to talk them out of that?
Do you butt in or nah?
If you want to get some stupid shit tattooed on you, I'm going to tell you it's stupid. But if in the end you really want it, I'll do it. But if you come to me with something racist or homophobic or
people
like,
do that?
Yeah, people want like stupid shit like on their body.
Like Nazi things or
swastikas?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Nazi things.
See, I can't even say the word.
Wait, so
you think I'm kidding.
No, what have you said no
we
to?
We need specifics.
Yeah, what have you said no to?
Some guy wanted me to fix his blood gang tattoo on his chest.
Oh, like and he's a member of the Bloods, yeah.
Yeah, well, he thinks he is. We live in Missouri.
Oh, they're going to come to get you, Jamesy.
Glenn really thinks he's in a gang, but all the heart to tell him. So he wanted you to fix it to what? Like bloodier? Or did he like an outline?
It was a shitty prison tattoo, and he wanted me to like redo it. And I was like, dude, I'll cover it, but other than that, get the fuck out.
And what did he get the fuck out?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, good.
What kind of safety precautions do you take? Because my mom, I mean, I wanted to tattoo for years. My mom is, you know, like, I'll make sure it's safe. Like, it's very safe, obviously. People are doing it. There are things like prison tattoos that are less safe. Sure.
And they're just so horribly done in prison.
So what do you say? Yeah, what do you say? How do you make someone feel comfortable with the safety and like health aspect of tattoos?
I usually like to open my needles and my tubes in front of my customers so that way they know that like everything's fresh. I'm not like using some HIV needle on you. Like it's all chill.
Just pulled this from AIDS. So what do you got? A peace sign?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's always good.
That's good. Yeah.
And gosh,
wait, I want to know about the other fucking shitty tattoo, like homophobic, racist, like what tattoos people are getting.
A lot of people want the rebel flag, but like, it's not just the rebel flag that they want, but like, yeah, they want stupid shit with it. That's like totally racist. And like, you can tell it's racist, but like, they're just like, no, it's
my expression of who I am.
And who you are sucks, bro.
And who I am is a racist.
Yeah.
Just get the word racist tattooed on you and own it then if you're going to be, oh God.
No, have you always been into tattoo culture or is that something that came about later in your life?
Yeah, I never wanted Barbie dolls unless they had tattoos on them. So.
Oh, because you know what? That's interesting because I always was like, I was always farther away from making the decision, but I was like, man, I think I just want to be like tatted up when I get older. And then as I get older, I'm like, I could do it. I could do it. And then I'm just too much of a pussy to make the leap. But I'm like, but clearly then if that was your thoughts on tattoos when you were a kid, like, yeah, you're meant to be a person who's tatted up. But I'm like, how do you take the leap? Because some people who are just covered in tats, like that's a big commitment.
I don't know. When I was 16, I got my first tattoo. And ever since then, I was like, put more on my body for Christmas, for my birthday. I'm going to get tattoos.
Yeah.
Now, who had to sign off for that when you were 16?
My mom did.
And was there a conversation or was she just totally okay with that?
She kind of tried to talk me out of getting visible tattoos. She's like, you might want to be a doctor someday. And I'm like, I probably don't.
Yeah, it's like, you know yourself already. It's like, if you're going to be a doctor or not.
Yeah.
What was your first tattoo?
It was actually on my shoulder. I was going to get it on my arm, but she talked me to getting it on my shoulder.
So you got it on my arms later.
But when I was finally 17 a year later, I was like, nope, it's not happening. Put it on my arm. Let's do it.
And what is it?
I actually got the Horde symbol from World of Warcraft.
That's awesome.
That's adorable. I love that.
Aw.
Good start.
Yeah, that was my first visible tattoo.
Well, that's a strong start. You got to start with a real message of who you are. Just go for it.
Do you have a thing in your head of like, I want to want this tattoo for a certain amount of time to know I should get it? Because that's the other thing that I was like, I just changed my mind.
That's definitely how I was before. But as I got into the tattoo industry and I was meeting other artists and they were like, oh, I have this dope idea, I was like, put it on my body.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever regretted a tattoo?
I have Mo Val tattooed on my ass, but that's about it.
What is this?
What?
Mo Val, and that's the college I go to.
Oh. I was like, is Mo Val like the kids are saying it to...
Well, you can cover it up if you wanted to, right?
I don't know if I can cover it up, though, because my friend did it one time in the dorms when we were, like, super drunk.
Was there a tattoo? Like, there's a tattoo. The person had a tattoo gun, right?
Yeah. We had a machine in the dorms. It was my machine, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you had been tatting him by that point.
No, there was so... I feel like there's... I have a friend who has a lot of tattoos visible, just like you. And she always shares these, like, heinous stories of how people treat her. Basically, like, really? Less of a woman and less of a human because she has these tattoos. Can you speak to any experiences?
Oh, my God. Sometimes you're, like, spoken to as, like, a degenerate almost. What? Like, mm-hmm. One of my friends is like super tatted up and he went to Macy's to buy a pair of socks and he went to the back to go grab the socks and like some old lady was just following him around the store, making sure he wasn't stealing shit and like followed him out of the store. And she's like, can I check your receipt? He's like, one pair of socks. I got one pair of socks. Like, what the shit?
God, that's like 1950. I didn't even know people thought that still.
No, all the time. Yeah, it's just
I guess in New York, it's like.
No, my friend lives in New York. Heinous experiences all the time. Whoa. She posts them on Facebook.
Well, because I don't have tattoos. That's why I've never encountered
them. Yeah. And that's why I've never really thought about it. Because there's a lot of things that you can look at a person and think, oh, I bet they get shit for that. But tattoos in 2017 was not something that I thought we were still dealing with. And there is also some kind of a connection that a lot of times people feel like you are, like trashy or like slut. Basically slut shamed because you're a tattoo.
The tramp stamp was a...
What if, why is there this societal connection between sexuality and tattoos?
Yeah, what the fuck, Daisy?
Dude, I wish I knew, but I feel like it's because we're putting so many, half naked models on top of, Inked magazine and shit
on
like
cars,
that.
Yeah.
And it really has nothing to do with the art. And that really kind of pisses me off because a half naked chick doesn't really have anything to do with tattooing.
Right.
Besides the fact that she has hella tattoos.
Yeah. But it's like you got a car show and there's all these chicks in bikinis showing you the car, but I'm like, I can just fucking look at the car. I don't need that. What the fuck does that have to do with auto?
It's a plus.
Yeah, it's fine. But I'm like, okay.
And what is the meaning of like tattoos and tattoo culture to you? Because I think we've been misled to meet, like, I don't know. I think society kind of looks at it as like sexuality or rebellion. Like, what does it mean to you?
I feel like it's a completely different form of art. Like other forms of art, they'll go away someday. Some of it might burn in a fire or it just might get lost in like time. Mm-hmm. But tattoos are the only thing that are really permanent and that you're going to take to the grave. And I think there's something really important behind that.
Yeah, that is kind of beautiful part about it.
There's
you
a lot of commitment
till
to
you
it.
Die. Yeah.
Are there any of your tattoos that like tell a certain story or have really special significance? Do they all?
I got Veni Vici tattooed on my fingertips because that means I came, I conquered. I didn't get the I saw part because I have really shitty eyesight. So.
And the only two hands. If you had
yeah,
to,
for sure.
Put on your toes and always see it.
Do you have like one artist that you always go to? Do you switch? Because I know some people are like, they can only go to one artist. If they go to another artist, it's like cheating.
Oh yeah, like your hairstylist.
Yeah, for sure. Tattoos. I feel like a lot of people are dedicated to their artists and that's cool and all, but I want to, have a mix of artists. I want to see their perspectives of it. And, I feel like it's cool to get different art. Why would you just buy from one artist all your life if you were like buying paintings or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any tattoos, but I follow so many tattoo artists on Instagram because I didn't even know these styles of tattoos were being tattooed on people's skins of like sketch style, a crow that's just like pops out at you. And you're like, that is the most beautiful fucking drawing. And then you're like, oh shit, it's a tattoo. And like the things that people can do with tattoos are so fucking creative.
What are your favorite kind of tattoos to do?
Probably traditional, neo-traditional, or anything with color, really.
And if someone who's listening wants to book an appointment with you, do they have to go to Missouri? Or if you're in town, like, do you travel with your tattoo?
I'm trying to figure out the whole traveling thing right now.
If you check it.
Yeah.
If you check
I'm trying to figure out the laws and the logistics.
Oh, yeah, because you have to have are you licensed only in Missouri or?
Yeah, I'm only allowed to tattoo in Missouri right now. So that's why I'm trying to figure out the whole traveling thing. Because I do have a lot of requests for people. They're like, come to Canada and tattoo me. And I'm like, I wish I could.
Come here.
Right. Because that would be like fun and lucrative and kind of like just kind of leave your art in a larger radius, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you attracted to most of the times other guys or girls with tattoos?
Yeah, I definitely have a thing for like alternative people.
Yeah. Have you ever been like as of late, like attracted to somebody with no tattoos? Like, cause I feel like people with tattoos, they like get something. Like it's like a club, but like a, I don't know, an already like higher plateau of thinking about art kind of thing. But that's only because I'm on the outside looking
in. Well, I mean, there's always chodes with tattoos. So you got to remember that. So,
That should be a bumper
sticker.
But
there's always like the people that are like into the commitment of the art. And that's what I really look for. So.
Yeah.
Huh.
And do you take guys and girls? Or are you only like sexual with guys and girls? Or do you have like
girls are hard to date.
That's what I was going to be like. So what's the difference? I mean, in your experience, why are girls harder to date?
They're just so complicated. And I'm already like the male in every relationship that I have. So.
Even with other males, you're the male?
Yeah.
I hear you.
I hope my boyfriend didn't.
It's all right. My boyfriend's manly and I'm still the
And I tell my boyfriend all the time, I feel like I'm dating a lesbian with a penis. And he's like, oh, thanks. Like, yeah, it's nice. I like it. But I do feel manly sometimes. But I'm like, well, like, I guess that is what it is.
Well, have you had like any like gals that you've dated for like a couple months, or like how far have you gotten in a relationship with a woman as far as like emotional or
the longest
commitment?
It's really lasted has been like a week or so, but like yeah, it's
because this is such a fucking ignorant question, but I'm like, when you both get your period, if you're dating for a long time and you sync up, that's just, I mean, I'm a monster. And I,
a weekend, we've already synced up.
Steven, like, he deals with me because he doesn't have that hormonal rage that I have. So I'm like, man, thank God for that. But I'm like, two hormonal ragers? I don't know. I know everyone's different. Like, you don't get that hormonal on your, you don't get like angry or anything.
No, if anything, I get like, I get it like very attached. And like more like, yeah.
Oof, total opposite.
Like I'll ask for like a hug, which is not something I would like normally do.
Well, now I know when you ask. Okay. Got it.
But like a week before, I asked for a lot of hugs.
And I'm like, get the fuck out of my face. So, you know.
Do you feel like the way you dress is like a reflection of you? Do you feel like it's something that you did to kind of like take control of your life back in some ways? Or are we just reading too much into this and you just like the way it fucking looks?
I mean, for a long time after my assault, so like about 2 or 3 years, I was like a straight scene kid. It was a terrible phase.
Scene kids.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was terrible. Coon tails and all the different colors of hair. It was awful.
Oh God, that was a.
But was that like
trend.
Just a? Did that help you to kind of like find yourself?
Yeah, I definitely feel like experimenting with my hair more often than I should have kind of helped me find who I was eventually.
Mm-hmm. It's still. I mean, it looks pretty healthy. I love your hair right now.
Thank
my gosh. That's like one of my favorite.
Yeah, I look like I steal Dalmatians for a living.
I know. Well, I love the Cruella de Vil look. It's so funny. I was like, I really, really like to do that. But it's just like when I get my hair that light, it falls out. So I can't.
Yeah, I can't process my hair too much.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a dating app?
A dating app?
Mm-hmm,
I used to have a Tinder, and then I just decided that all the guys on there were like douches. So.
Yeah, that's.
And like none of the girls were into girls on there. So I was like, why am I here?
Yeah.
Is there have you found around you in Missouri a big bisexual or lesbian community that you can kind of hang out with? Or is it just not, is it something that's like kind of more under the radar?
I mean, if you go more towards the city and when the college kids come back to town, there's more of that kind of crowd of people. But since I'm living in a small town right now, not necessarily.
And do you feel like, I mean, is there, I'm guessing they don't do anything like a pride parade, right?
Oh, no. In Missouri, never.
All 10 people.
Not in the whole
line.
Not in the whole state, not even in the city.
Okay, maybe in Kansas City, but the rest of Missouri is kind of, yeah.
No. I mean, is there like, because I mean, I watched this documentary like I think it's called Small Town Gay Club. And it basically, you know, goes around to, just as you would think, small town gay clubs. And I thought it was really interesting because in these tiny towns where, you know, sexuality wasn't even something you could barely talk about, especially not something like that's part of the LGBTQ community. There were these places where people really thrived and expressed themselves. Have you ever been to any place like that near your hometown, or just totally don't know of it existing?
No, I know it exists in the city anyways, but it honestly does not exist in small town Missouri.
Yeah.
Huh.
Especially since I grew up in town where I graduated with 32 people, and I was like literally 32. The only kid that partied in my high school
class. The only one? Well, yeah. 32,
so
that's not
everyone just looked at me like I was a Satan child most of the time. So
a Satan child.
Wow. Yeah. She has fun.
You
She's from Satan.
Very nice. I don't.
Were you much different when you were 18?
2 years ago?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what was that last
yeah,
month?
I mean, when I was 18, I was engaged to that douchebag. So,
Wait, how did that come
rewind.
About?
Rewind. How did he ask you?
Okay, it was really lame how he asked.
I'm
me
sure
too.
It was.
He pushed
us all the
a skateboard
details.
In front of you with a bouquet of flowers.
No, not even that.
And skateboard ran
We're
over the flowers.
Walking to like Casey's, which is a gas station in Missouri,
no!
to get pizza.
What?
And he was like, what if I married you?
So he took you out
and
to
I was
dinner.
Like, that's it.
What if I married you?
That's it. Yeah.
But that was that an actual request?
And what'd you say?
And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I already gave you a promise ring. What if it was like an engagement ring? And I was like 18 at the time. So I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to get married and get more money from FAFSA. Why not?
Oh, Jesus. I wouldn't even... Dude, there are financial benefits to marriage.
That's true. Yeah, the government really wants you to get married. Yeah.
So wait, so he was like, you want to get like an engagement ring? You're like, okay. And he's like, okay. And then he got, but he didn't have it that night.
Did you have,
I already had it on. It was a promise ring that he would
So he was just like, I'm going to transfer that ring and now it's an engagement ring. He didn't buy a new ring.
No.
So wait, and then you were wearing a promise ring that he wouldn't cheat on you, but he was like.
Was that the promise though? Or was the promise like, you're great.
No.
Promise.
But wait, so was it his idea to give you a promise ring or was it your idea?
Yeah, no.
So he was like obviously a serial cheater and he was like, if I give her this promise ring.
She'll never suspect.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know what? Promise rings are such an interesting thing because a lot of people did it. But I'm like, what's the promise? What is the promise in a promise ring? I honestly don't know that we're going to get married eventually.
Yeah, that's
a precursor to the real
that
promise.
That is the promise. Yeah. Yes.
It's a promise to the legal promise.
It's a promise. It's like a save the date on your finger.
Oh. Yeah.
Save the date on our love. That's what it is.
It's going to happen. I'm not ready
but
yet.
But I don't know when.
It's coming. Oh boy. Okay.
What is a, okay. All right. Well, I mean, before somebody gives you a promise ring, do you discuss it about the intentions of the promise? Or does he know that you're into that promise? So he's just like, I'm gonna fucking give her this and she's gonna love it.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, and
I
you
told
loved
you,
it?
He was like a total douche. But yeah.
Jesus. Oh, promise rings.
Do you have a certain like list of things that you look for in a mate now or in a partner?
No promise rings.
That you didn't have before that you've learned from experiences? Mostly negative.
Oh, yeah, like, man. What are the things that you're like, well, if he does this, I'm out.
So tattoos, we got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was, like, super controlling of me. So if a guy ever tells me, like, what to wear, I'm like, nah, you gotta go. Bye.
Okay, so no controlling.
Yeah, he would tell
no
you what
controlling.
To wear. Yeah.
Would
he be like, that skirt's too short. Everyone's gonna look at you. And then my penis is gonna shrink. Basically, what that means. What else are red flags for you?
I mean... If they're kind of like crybabies over everything, like when they don't get their way, he was like so terrible about that. Yeah.
Would he like stomp his feet?
All the time, like when he wouldn't get his way.
What?
Yeah. Like
wait,
he would throw
was he
tantrums.
Six?
Wait, what is
no,
an example?
He's older
of,
than me. It was the sad part.
Oh, was like if he was like, I want chicken fingers tonight. And you're like, not tonight. And he's like, I want chicken fingers. You're like, wow. Okay. Do this to me 8 times. Shame on me, but 9 times. I'm out.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And now what do you think your worst quality is when you're like in a relationship? What is the thing that you know is bad about you, but it's probably not going to change?
We're all pieces of shit in some way, you know?
I'm terrible when I get drunk. Like I am terrible.
Like how so? Yeah.
The other night.
You spread rumors about people that are true.
No. Like the other night when my boyfriend was like trying to have a heart to heart with me, I was like, you're my favorite person tonight for $350.
What? Yeah, but like, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's funny.
Did he think it was funny or was it
very
like,
funny at the time?
Oh, hers.
Yeah, we were trying to have to like a heart to heart. I totally called him like a hooker. So,
hey, baby, I'll pay you a couple bucks if you shake that ass.
Yeah, that just sounds fun.
It's not the time for a serious conversation. If somebody had to try, every time anybody's ever had to seriously talk to me when I'm drinking, I'm like, let's just wait.
It's not the time and the place, really, especially not on your birthday. Are you, but apart from like when you're drinking, are you difficult to have a heart to heart with? Or because you said you have a lot of masculine qualities and that's one.
I mean, I definitely do have like a hard time opening up. So I feel like that kind of like puts guys off because I'm supposed to be sensitive, but I'm not the one crying during Finding Dory.
Mic drop. That's what I would have said to him when I took the promise ring off and threw it in his face.
Oh my God. That is really funny.
I mean, it was an emotional movie. I don't know.
Right.
Do you cry? Are you a crier? Some women and men, like some men I know are criers. And I like that when there's like a fine line, obviously, like if you throw a temper tantrum when you don't get your way and you cry, like,
right.
But like, I love when a man can like, be comfortable enough to like cry and give a shit.
If you can be like sensitive when it's like rational, then that's definitely like something I look to.
Are you a crier? Do you cry?
No.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey gets me sometimes.
What the fuck is how does wow. he make you
what,
cry?
Yeah, what is it specifically about?
Have
him?
You seen him in Interstellar?
Oh
my God. No.
I missed Interstellar.
No. That did look good though.
It was good.
So that was his one performance that really spoke to you?
Yeah, it killed me.
I was going to say, what's that movie he was in? He's on the beach. He's like, I don't know. Whatever.
That's interesting because I'm not very emotional in real life as far as crying, but I cry all the time during movies. Sometimes during episodes of Sex and the City or Girls. I mean, that's not my proudest moments, but it really just does happen. I don't know what it is about it, though.
Oh, I cry all the time. Just cry when I'm happy. Cry when I'm confused.
I don't think I've ever cried when I was happy.
Really? Mm-mm. Have you?
I don't even understand happy crying, really.
You're like, bitch, what? You do what?
Yeah. I don't understand happy. Well, maybe during my fake wedding to myself, I think maybe one time I did cry. That's another that's another story for another day, though. So we're going to wrap up soon, but so let's go back to the Safe Bay because I know we definitely want to promote this. Like, how can people get involved with Safe Bay if they want to? And it's Safe, S-A-F-E, Bay, like you're my bay, B-A-E.
Yeah, before anyone or anything else.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's .org. And if you go online, we have like community toolkits for people wanting to be activists. We have ways for kids to start their own safe base squads in their schools.
And what's a safe base squad?
Yeah. It's basically like a club where you get together and you just promote awareness and you stomp out bullying against sexual violence survivors and stuff like that. We actually just dropped a new campaign called Quit This Shit, which I shared with the names. Yeah. And so basically it's just saying that you won't shit talk a survivor.
That's great. And I like the language. I like that it's called Quit This Shit because it's like when people a lot of times talk about sexual violence and what can we be doing better and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, talk to me like I'm a human. Like that's language I understand. That's a concept I grasp immediately. I don't need to like...
It's language for millennials, language for how we live today. Because I mean, I think for something to work, it certainly has to feel accessible and not like... You know, not like just a class in college. It needs to feel like something I can use in my everyday life. It can't be like this elitist talk. Because a lot of times social activism is like, feels like it's only for people who have a 4.0.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's so cut and dry. And I feel like that's why it's so important that the board on Safe Bay, we're so young. So we're actually able to like relate to the people that we're talking to. And they're just not staring at us like we're a 50-year-old woman preaching to them. Like,
right. And they feel they relate to you automatically. And then you've been through similar instances. So it's like, okay, I can express what I'm thinking. Even if I don't know, I can just like think out loud to you and help me figure out what the fuck like to do next or whatever.
Yeah.
That's good.
And just last thing, as a survivor, what advice, I'm sure you've been asked this before, would you give to other survivors? Because we have a lot of survivors listening.
To other survivors, I would just say, don't be afraid to reach out. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be down on you, but there's twice as many people that are going to be supportive of you. And it's not healthy to keep all that in. You need to get that out. You need to talk to someone about it. You know, your existence is important and you're significant. So you need to talk about your story. It's important.
Yeah. I do have one more question.
Go ahead.
Social media justice. thoughts. Do you know what I mean? Like, we talked about it a couple times on the podcast with the law does you run. You do the steps, the ideal steps that you could do, the most you could do legally after getting sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets done. What do you do? And then, you know, a couple of people have, and we've witnessed it in our own New York City, specifically New York City comedy community, of outing a rapist.
People turn to social media. They out them on Twitter or Instagram.
The authorities aren't doing anything to help. And then I did see it work. Mm-hmm. I saw the person get banned from performing.
Wow.
Yeah. But do you have experiences with that, or do you have friends that have done that, or what are your thoughts on that?
To an extent, because when my case did go viral, Anonymous picked it up, and those people who were bullying me before, they were definitely shut down immediately.
Nice. Hmm. Oh yeah, Anonymous Twitter. That they do some good shit.
Yeah, they're pretty wild.
Have you ever had anybody like go to social media, or have you ever known anybody to go to social media to be like, you know what? This person assaulted me and I'm tired of keeping it in and I'm tired of people not believing me and the authorities didn't do anything. Have you ever had known anybody?
Yeah, there's actually one girl that I worked with this past fall who, like, she reported to her campus. They didn't do anything about it. And they actually ended up kicking her off because they were saying that she was slandering this guy.
Wow.
So she took it to the internet and it ended up that her story got picked up and reopened. So.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. That's like a really productive thing to happen from.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeez. Because it's so, I don't know how I feel on it, but also I've seen it do what I would think someone would intend it to do is like at least
enrage people.
Enrage people and then stop working with that person. Like, I want to know. I don't want to work with that person. Right. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's so often and it's like, oh, do you know so-and-so? Yeah, actually, they had sexually assaulted a friend of mine. I'm like, ah, fuck, well, not talking to them. It's like,
yeah.
I kind of rely on people to tell me those types of things, either to me personally or somewhere that I could see it to like kind of distance myself, because that's the only thing I know how to do to make it better. I don't even know. It's a confusing concept to me, but
yeah,
I don't know. Good and bad things.
All right. So thank you very much for coming and sitting down with us.
Yeah,
and
thank you for having me.
Do you like people? Are you okay with people reaching out to you on Twitter, or what's the best way if someone wants?
Yeah, both my Twitter and my Instagram are public. So
and what is the handle
for my Instagram is actually Grapple Me Mate, and that's
That's funny.
Yeah, it's spelled G R A P P L E M E and then M A.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Perfect.
And then on Twitter, you are
Daisy Coleman. Just search me up.
Daisy
You'll find
Coleman.
Me.
Perfect.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us. This has been Guys We Fucked, the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.